MLK stood up for human rights.
200 episodes later, we continue to do our part.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Welcome, Earthlings, to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Today, we're going to welcome Dr. Steve Iacovelli to the show to talk about his new book, Pride Leadership, Strategies for the LGBTQ Plus Leader to Be a King or Queen of Your Jungle, or Their Jungle is the actual title. This book is dedicated to all the LGBTQ plus advocates out there striving to make the world just a little bit better. From the lesbian leading their workplace LGBTQ employee resource groups, to the gay man starting a gay straight alliance at school, to the senior transgender executive paving the way for other trans folks in the workplace, to the gender-fluid healthcare worker sharing their perspectives on how the department can be more inclusive, to the bisexual coworker educating their peers and being visible to others. These are all the folks, much like us, the readers, or the readers of this book that we would be discussing, who are making a change for the better. My name is Tom, and I am your host, and as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to The Dish.
What?
You missed it. Well.
Did I miss it?
Something happened.
200 episodes in and she missed it. That's okay.
It's fine.
So it is our
practice 200th. Practice makes perfect.
It is our 200th episode. Can't believe that we've been on the air. This March 7th will be 4 years of us doing the show.
It's four incredible. 4 years.
4 years.
I'm ready.
4 years. And
thank God for Truly and LCC.
That's right.
You'll have to be a long time subscriber to get that one.
So we thought that we would shake things up a little bit for our 200th episode and do something a little bit different. And so
we had margaritas for lunch.
We did.
I wasn't there.
So what we're going to do is we're going to use the first half of the show, the first half hour, before we bring our guest on to talk about instances throughout the past 4 years that have been impactful for us that we remember that, you know, sort of kind of shook us here in the chair while we did our show for the, you know, for the past 4 years. So I think it's going to be cool. I like it. So I'll toss it over to you two boys if you want to start.
Of course. Of okay. course you will.
All right. So why don't you start, Trish?
I don't know. So it was funny when we were at lunch today, we were talking about Dr. G and his first episode with us was actually episode 100. So he's been with us for 2 years now.
Yes.
And has it been a ride?
Yes, it has.
Yes, it has. I mean, we've learned so much throughout the course of those 2 years, you know, with all of his great information that we've shared with our folks on the show. And, you know, it's really interesting to see not only how we've learned, but also our listeners and the feedback and the engagement that, you know, his adding him to the show as a reoccurring guest every month has really made an impact.
And maybe by episode 300, he'll have actually been in your butthole too.
You never know.
There's hope.
He won't want to be hope. There today.
Oh my God.
He doesn't want to be in there today.
I was like, are we going to go there?
Oh Lord.
So, no.
No, okay. No. I think we'll keep that one.
Tom secret. Pooped his pants.
I did. I thought I needed to fart and it just, oops. I'm like,
you overtrusted a fart. You never overtrust.
Oh Lord have mercy. I was literally standing in my kitchen. Nick was on the sofa and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go for it. He's not going to smell it over there. And then, I was like, oh my God, I got to go. Goodbye. And I just ran in the bathroom and just, yeah. Shit my pants.
So Dr. G needs to look at your butt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not today, though. Not today.
But we've had a wild ride. I mean, just thinking about the time we went to D.C.
I was going to say, it's brought us to so many places. Mm-hmm. D.C., New York, a couple times New York, up to Tanglewood.
Yep. Jess Branis.
Yep.
That's
out
right.
Out to Philly, Wildfire Radio.
Schmo, we love you.
We do. Yeah, it's brought us to the lovely Camden. Who could ever forget that paradise of Camden, New Jersey? Shout out to all of our people running stoplights.
I'll never forget. If the light is red, just keep driving.
Yes.
What do you mean? They were like, just keep driving.
Yeah, don't stop. Don't stop.
Okay. And then like we get to the Wildfire Radio Studios and we immediately just opened the trunk. It was a nice warm day. We got peaches and we ended up getting
We made a bourbon cocktail. Yeah, peaches.
We were muddling peaches in the back of my truck. The boys get there and they're like, what the fuck? These guys have a whole fucking kitchen in the back of
their truck. We were going to show up with like Natty Ice. Like, no, we muddling. And it's brought us to Florida a little bit with Trish calling in up to the Berkshires. I think Tom might have even called in when he went away a couple times, maybe Maine. Or when you went to that your slut party in the hotel. Did you call for that?
MAL.
Let's talk about the first time he went to Maine and didn't do the show with us.
That was always a good one, too. Trish ran it.
She did. She ran the show. And then, like, at the end of the episode, as soon as everybody says bye, she goes... Like, you could tell the stress level of managing, you know, countless things at the same time got to her throughout the episode.
That episode, we had a guest. We had an in-studio guest. We had something else, a pre-recorded segment, too. Mm-hmm. And we also had all the dish. And I'm like, what the fuck I'm doing?
On top of countless meetings before,
but you did it.
During, and after.
But you did it. Mm-hmm. And that was the best part about all of that, that you got through it. And yeah, there was that exasperating at the end. But that was like, you know, kudos. You guys, like, you know, you did your thing. You held the fort down.
Yeah, it was
fun. It was fun. It also brought us to Canada. The first time where the real, meanwhile,
in Canada.
Oh my God, it's been so long. I miss it.
I know. And then Deutschland.
Yes, like, Deutschland. Yeah, brought us to Germany. Yeah. I called in a little drunk, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
She slept in a parking lot.
That was not that time.
But it was a time.
We also got our mascot, Dookie.
Yes, right. We got Dookie.
I know, remember, because the CEO,
Bobby Edwards,
came on and he spoke to us about, you know, how he conceived the idea of creating Squatty Potty. And
because his mom could never poop. She was always back the hell up. So he's like, well, maybe if I lift her legs up a little bit, but I'm not going to be there for the deed. So I'm going to make her something for it.
Yeah. And it worked.
Led to it.
And that connection led us to, at the time, his communications director,
Linda Stay.
Who for me was one of the more memorable episodes that I have ever had an opportunity to produce, because the story that this woman brought to the table, being an ex-Mormon church member and leaving the church for her kid at the time.
Kids.
And then to find out later that both of her children are members.
All three.
All three?
I believe it's three.
Are all three part of the LGBT community?
I believe so.
I believe all three were, yes.
It was just an amazing overall experience just to experience that woman. She's incredible.
She was the first one to ever accomplish silencing us. We were speechless, nearly all in tears listening to her story. Mm-hmm. And then this incredible story and the work and her accidental activism led us to working with Dragon Dads, Yasu. I always have to make sure I'm getting it right. And then
Daddy Dragons.
Yeah,
whatever.
Right?
Yeah, okay.
But then even going into where we had Mama Kim join us, and we had the woman down south who was giving hugs or was going to...
Free mom hugs. Yeah.
Was walking down the aisles for people going to weddings whose parents would refuse to show up.
Yeah. Sarah Cunningham is her name.
Yeah. Like the amount of activism that... having Linda Stay on or Bobby Edwards has opened up to us to bring onto the show has been absolutely incredible.
So, interesting fact about Sarah Cunningham, they are actually in the works of creating a movie on this experience that she's had in being a stand-in mom for people whose parents don't want to be a part of same-sex weddings. And none other than Jamie Lee Curtis is going to be playing her.
That's amazing. Oh, That's an honor.
Yeah, it is. And so
for both.
There's a picture of both of them, like they were sitting down, and I think Jamie had went to visit her. And I'm not going to, you know, assume what that conversation was like, but I'm assuming that she was doing some sort of research. Okay, tell me about you. What's gone on in your life? I'm going to play you, so I need to make sure I have all the details, right? And I think that's amazing. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I can't wait to see that project come to fruition, because I'm sure that, again, this was also a woman who was very religious. She was very conflicted. Her son ended up coming out. She wrote a book about her conflicts with church and being a mother of an LGBTQ boy. And so I'm interested to see what that plays out like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. And we can't forget our overseas partners as well.
Of course.
That's right.
And I'm not talking about Hans. Oh, God.
Yeah. Hi, Hans.
Hi, Hans. Of course
I still
I'm
love you.
About you.
Did you say, of course I tolerate you?
No, I said, of course I'm talking about you.
Oh, you said, of course I tolerate you, Hans.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've had him on the show, I don't know how many times. And
twice in one night, because Tom forgot to hit record.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
That was
a twofer.
I was going to bring it up.
Oh, sorry. I beat you to it.
It's fine.
Six books. You know, it all started with Stories Beneath the Rainbow, I believe. That Jeff Shorta from Stanford had reached out to and said, hey, I have this author that, you know, I think he would be a really good fit for your show. And boy, was he fucking right. I mean, we've enjoyed our ride. And he's actually, you know, when he traveled in from New York not too long ago, I think it was like 3 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago, maybe longer, he ended up joining us here in studio. And that was an experience all on its own. It was one of the first times that we had one of our international guests actually be with us in studio and be able to experience everything here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we've had different guests come on from Europe, the ones who are in the leading case with the marriage equality across the European Union.
That's
we've had Tiberiu from, was he Romania?
I believe he was from Romania. He's in Spain now.
Okay.
So we're friends on Facebook. See, and that's the other thing, the connections that you make with a lot of these guests and the people, and you start seeing what they're doing to make the world a better place for LGBTQ folks, which is amazing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And but yeah, he's in Spain, and he's loving it.
Good
he's
for him.
He's living his best life. You know, and for Hans, you know, it's going back to Hans, it's just, it's been an incredible ride. And our connection runs deep with Hans, because we literally, like, almost every other week talk, whether that's through social media or through interactions on Messenger. But
last week was a little rough.
Yeah, it was. But, you know, we make it happen.
And another really interesting thing is we are now going to be experiencing our second election season.
That's right.
On the show. Like, so many people don't really think about how many election seasons they go through, especially people of our age.
That's right.
They really don't think about it. And we've been really good with making sure that we're covering what's going on across our nation, really sharing the facts, also making sure that we're tying it into LGBT issues. But we're really being sure that we try to keep ourselves informed and spread information, factual information as much as possible. And we'll never forget that dreadful night back in 2016 where we, you know, 15 minute by 15 minutes became more and more somber. But now we're
the election episode,
the election episode, a little cursive. It wouldn't be 200 episodes without some cursive.
That's right.
Let's put that out there.
100%.
Exactly. 200%. So yeah, we're looking forward to this season going on. I mean, February 3rd, that's right around the corner. The first Iowa caucuses, the following week, the caucuses in New Hampshire, or the primaries in New Hampshire. So this is going to be a whole new season for us. A lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's been an amazing ride. And you're right, that episode was gut-wrenching. I mean, to get to the end of that, we were crying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were sobbing. It was tragic. And but, you know, we picked it up. We picked up our faces. Well, at least Trish did. Or she put it back on.
Yeah, it was like that mascara was a runner.
Mm-hmm. And we drank our cocktails and... I believe we had mojitos that day.
We did, and then we had champagne, and I said, it's going to be one of two things. Either we pop it to celebrate, or if we pop it, hopefully it'll hit me hard enough to kill me. So it was one of the, you know, obviously we know who wins if with the circumstance.
We literally took my entire dinner table, right, because we wanted to see the TV and dragged it into my living room.
I forgot about
and
that.
We set up everything in front of my big TV so that we can see everything as it was coming in and talking about everything. It was just incredible. It was
terrible.
It was, for the first time, we were like the Anderson Cooper, the Don Lemon, and the Rachel Maddow. Like, for the first time on this show, we were like, the gay queens bringing news to you. And it was fun.
And it was so funny because Chris would be like, we've got an update. I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? We've had a lot of fun.
That's the first time I felt like a news anchor on this show.
You know, and, but we've also had a lot of moments of crying, a lot of moments of devastation and sharing news that at times was very heartbreaking to share. I remember Pulse. When Pulse happened, I remember shortly after June 12th, we did an episode and we decided that we were going to read the names of the 49 victims on that episode. And we split up the names. I obviously took the names of most of the Latinos in the bunch because I wanted to make sure that we got it right. And because Nick said, I can't pronounce this. You need to.
I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah. And that was crazy. We cried and cried. And then out of that was born one of the, I think,
most iconic
part of
segments
of our show.
Without a doubt.
You know,
are you going to say it? Angels and Assholes?
Yeah.
It got quiet. I'm like, are we going to remind them what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. So it was Angels and Assholes. And the whole premise behind that was that we were going to use one episode for 49 episodes to talk about one of the victims during each episode. And then we would burn two senators that voted at that time against sensible gun control reform. And so the person was our angel, and then these two senators would be our assholes. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, and our interactions with some of our folks on Twitter, we made a connection with another, you know, person that's been very central to our show, at least for the first 2 years, which was Melissa Etheridge. Mm-hmm.
An icon of our community.
Yeah, and it's so funny because we've got news on her too later. But, you know, we ended up having her on the show not once but twice. Mm-hmm.
And meeting her. Not once but twice.
Yes. Well, for you guys, it was twice. And then the last time we went up to Tanglewood, we got an opportunity to actually go backstage and have some words with her. And
bitches, we were friends and family.
Right?
We had the time.
Because we're standing there, and they're like, why does everyone have these lanyards and like their badges, and we like go to say something like, oh no, you're friends and family. We're like, oh, oh, she bougie.
I was like, we didn't pay for this.
Let me. I know, we hear them, how much did you pay? And then Trish goes, oh, you paid?
So terrible.
It's, I don't want to say their names, I'll say their initials, but C and J actually met her twice too.
Mm-hmm.
So they was lucky too.
Yeah, the first time we went up there, I was like, they were like, are we gonna meet her? I'm like, uh-huh. Like, we knew it.
We swam through the mud to get to that woman that day.
Oh my god, yeah, it was terrible. So rainy the first time.
And then I, of course, I walk up to her and, you know, we get pictures, we hug, and we're all saying amazing stuff. You know, you're great. We're your fans. We love you. Thank you for being on our show. And then I sort of kind of like nonchalantly just said, and by the way, we've got some herbal tea waiting for you back at the studio. And she started laughing. So apparently she must have remembered one of the first conversations we had, where we had our fourth host at the time when we started, was inviting her, say, yeah, come over. You know, if you're all into herbal, then we'll make you some herbal tea. And I'm like,
no, he's like, what do you like to drink? And she's like, well, I'm more into the herbal stuff.
And she was like, oh, so we'll have some herbal tea. And I was like, Paul,
tea and
totally missed it. It just went right over your head. And, you know, she loves pot.
She's a big activist for it. Actually arrested at the Canadian-U.S. border for carrying marijuana. So you do you, girl. You do you.
So it was nice to see her in a state, doing a show in a state in where she would be able to just light up and do it recreationally as part of her gig.
And she opened amazing. For 45, oh, an hour and 45 That's minutes. Right. And when she went to the back of the stage and was just going at the drums, one of the best moments of my life.
And I have to tell you, Pat Benatar,
incredible,
who was doing a show in conjunction with Melissa. This was part of the whole act, was incredible with her husband.
With her husband, yep.
Yeah, it was fun. We had such a good time. But anyway, back to Angels and Assholes. That was, you know, all of that just, it just happened. And then we've had other guests, too.
I remember sitting on your like little porch outside your old apartment.
Uh-huh.
And we were all sitting there after the show. And that was a heavy show.
Yes, it
and
was.
And we were like, we need to do something else. We need to do more. What can we do? And we developed this Angels and Assholes segment together. And it was like, it was, I think, the first time our show actually kind of almost gelled and solidified, because we found something that we were so connected to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we built our show around that.
Right.
Yeah.
And our show has been that since. And when it ended, we were like, well, what are we going to do now?
I know.
49 episodes later, we're like,
You're absolutely. It really was the transition for our listeners who have been, you know, following us religiously for 200 episodes. You know that in the beginning of the show, we would always have like a topic that we used to talk about, whether it be weddings or different shows on Broadway, and then we would, you know, say,
twins, creaming faces,
those are for the real religious listeners. But then, once around episode, I believe 22. Maybe 22, 24 came. Yep. That really solidified Gay Talk as the show that we would become for the next 174 episodes following that.
I think we went from the sense of gossip, right, and talking about juicy stuff to becoming advocates and talking about things that are impacting our community.
And I guess we owe a sense of gratitude to then-candidate President Trump, because that motherfucker gave us so much damn material.
I know.
And then still have.
But then when, especially when he brought Mike Pence onto the team, mm-hmm. and then we knew that this was a direct attack, not toward any other community alone, but also our community. This was a direct impact to the LGBTQ community, and we knew that this was our chance, this is our voice where we can stand up and we can do our best to make a difference.
And the fact that I couldn't say LGBTQ for the longest time. What did you do to me?
We had a little poster that sat right next to him in the studio, which was his dining table at the time, and it read out LGBTQ+, so he could look at it every time he needed to say it.
And I still screwed it up.
But you got it now.
Yeah, you got it now.
It like rolls off your tongue better than any other word you say.
it's like one big R for you.
Hello. I agree. No, it was an incredible ride, you know, and there have been episodes and things that we've discussed on the show that at times have made us like, whoa. You know, and I think back to the time where we had, I believe his name is Steve Esteb, and he was talking about the movie that he had produced and wrote, Hate Crime. And we were talking about the movie, but then we sort of kind of like moved over to some of his personal things, you know, what he did on a personal level, et cetera. And he started talking about a friend who had transitioned, who died. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I hope I don't get this wrong, but the person committed suicide. And Elsie was sitting with us, and we were all here, and we just gasped. It was very impactful to see the pain that this man was portraying, you know, when we had him over Skype. We could see him. And I remember that. I'll never forget that conversation, right? Because that came out of left field. Mm-hmm. We didn't know that was going to happen. We didn't know that that was where the conversation would lead. But it was very, very shocking for me. Right. And I've never forgotten that. And I remember, like, drying my eyes and like, oh my God, I hope I don't start crying now because this is just going to make me lose it. Mm-hmm. And there's been plenty of times that also, we've lost it on the show.
Yeah, remember when we had author Bill Prickett on to talk about his book, A Double-Minded Man, you know, the struggles that he went through being incredibly religious, incredibly involved with mm-hmm. the church, and then going through a sense of gay conversion therapy, and for so long pushing off who he truly was, fighting with his religious background, and then finally being able to accept himself mm-hmm. years later. And we've talked about a love letters that were discovered between two British soldiers 90 years after the fact, that they were still sending letters back and forth from each other during the Second World War. There are these incredible stories that are heart-wrenching. They can really mm-hmm. bring tears to your eyes, but at the same time, they can bring some joy to you toward the end. Some of them, unfortunately, are not the happiest endings.
It's been an incredible ride, I have to say. And there's a lot of episodes that we've had. Some are, you know, I have my favorites. I believe the first time, the one where we recorded the entire, like half of the episode with Hans, and then I'm like realizing, I look back.
And it wasn't recorded.
It's not recording. We had to do the entire recording all over again. I was like, holy shit, man, that sucked. But that was one of my favorite moments. Because, you know, it's shit like that happens. It's mm-hmm. unexpected. You just don't know what's going to happen. That, you know, just gets you to be on your toes and try to double check everything. And now that's made me super neurotic. Like, I run around, I'm like, this is all set, this is all set, that's all set.
By the way, we haven't recorded the first 20 minutes of the show.
Yeah, right, exactly. Start it again.
And even, don't say that to me. I would
do you remember how excited I was when we had Dan Savage on the show?
Yes.
So long ago.
Literally before we started recording, I was like, okay, I just need to say this before we start recording. I love you so much. And he was like, all right. And then like halfway through the fucking podcast, you just hear him typing away. I'm like, oh, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
We're baby podcasters.
That was fun.
Yeah, weird, you know. But he did come on the show.
He was wonderful.
Yeah, he was. And we've had, again, multiple more people in the community. Tony Ferriola.
That's right.
Chris Entwistle out of, you know, can't forget, out of Australia when they were going through
Australia equality.
Yeah, exactly. When they were going to really push for the popular vote, a referendum on whether the citizens should allow same-sex marriage. And he was knocking door to door, and some people, you know, closing the door in his face, some people throwing out scripture, some people throwing out praise. Remember, there was that one group that put up a billboard next to a pizza shop, and it said, it's okay to say no, referencing a no vote on the referendum for legalizing mm-hmm. same-sex marriage. And then the pizza shop took it to its effect to put up a sign attached to it that said, two pineapple on pizza. And that was how they were standing up to this bigotry. Those are stories that I'll never forget from these people are icons across the country.
Voices for Chechnya, when you guys went down
on that march.
That was
and that
wonderful.
Little troll came up to me. I was like,
oh, wrong person.
You came up to the wrong guy.
But then we had Patrick Riley on a couple times from he was in Afterglow. Right? That was how we got connected, right? Mm-hmm. No, we got connected something. There was something else we got connected.
Well, he released his own music later, but it was due to Afterglow.
Which was
he came back on.
Amazing show and has a run going on right now in Europe.
Fantastic.
I mean, he's doing amazing stuff.
We were honored to be a guest to go see that.
We have to give shouts out to Glenn North mm-hmm. and Jill Fay.
Absolutely.
Right. Obviously. And then we also had
Jeff Ransom, too. Mm-hmm.
Who?
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 Eric Ransom?
Eric.
Ransom. Shit. Sorry, Eric.
I was like,
I know.
Different person.
Like, wrong guy.
And then
sorry,
that
Eric.
Really awesome Jeff Hammerberg, the LGBTQ real estate agent that
That's
started
right.
the LGBTQ.
GayRealEstate.com.
Yeah, GayRealEstate.com.
It's in every episode. Everybody forget this.
And
I also want to give a shout out to some of the podcasts that have joined us. So
right.
we've had By the By, mm-hmm. we've had Drinks with Jess, we've had Life on the Swing Set, of course, The Idiots, It's a Mess Podcast with Caswell, The Community Podcast, and What About Your Friends Podcast. I'm sure there are more. We've had so many.
That's right. And you know, one of the other amazing things is the opportunity to be able to network with fellow podcasters mm-hmm. and people that are also putting in the time and putting words and bringing you shows with content that's entertaining and informative. And I think it's just been a beautiful ride. And I want to, you know, take the opportunity to thank all of you, all of our listeners who have been, you know, with us since day one. And then, of course, with the addition of services like Patreon.
Absolutely.
And having all of you Patreon subscribers, you know, donating and helping the show out on a monetary basis. We truly appreciate the fact that you allow us to continue to do this because we truly love doing this.
And we have to definitely give a big shout out because this was a guest who's been on multiple times, was incredibly talented at burning Trish. We just love Dave Hartman every time he would come on. And we definitely look forward to having him on again when it's possible.
That was the worst roast ever.
I know
because the whole...
But he's actually really great.
But we were terrified because we knew that when he came back...
It was scary.
I would have to hide all the knives and all the, like, you know, the... What do you call those? The saws, the electric ones.
No. A chainsaw?
A chainsaw. You would have to hide that. You would have
Words
to,
are
like,
hard. She's new.
I was listening to this roast, and I'm like, oh, guys, thank you. Like, the whole time, I'm like,
right?
Oh, they care about me.
And Dave's got his, like, 5 pages handwritten back and front of, like, terrible jokes for you.
And he would be like...
14-size font.
He would be like, oh, so... He would, like, slam me about something, but then... And say this, like, amazing thing about, like, my personality. And I'd be like, I don't understand what's happening.
But, you know, we'd rather, like, roast you to your face. That's really what it is.
It's, too, you know what's really kind of great about the show?
Yeah.
We've been able and have shared so much about our personal lives with our listeners.
That's right.
And
like me shitting my pants today.
Yeah. Well, that was, we forced you to do that. but I mean, we really have. And I think that is what one of the biggest things that has touched people and has had people come and email us and reach out and just, you know, feel like they're a part of something.
Yeah. And, you know, it's part of it's being able to stay connected to a community where in your area one may not exist. And it allows you to do that for free. Right. And be able to do that every week and go back and listen and really stay informed on what's going on, because it is important. It is our community and it is our responsibility to bring that forward.
We legit brought everybody into Dr. G's office while Chris was getting his butt touched for the first time.
I can hear it. My God, have you ever bottomed? But anyway.
So funny.
I was like, Trish is right outside the door.
I'm in the consulting room and I'm just like, yup, heard that.
So we need to go to break because we do have a guest that's coming on. And so we want to be respectful and timeful. But before we go, I also would like to thank Patrick Dunn from the New Haven Pride Center. He's done amazing work. He's been with us countless times, a source of information, and just an incredible person overall. And we're super proud of the work that he's done and all of the amazing work that the Pride Center is doing as a result of his hard work.
He's truly transformed that place. Also, Age Project New Haven.
That's right.
They're incredibly important to the New Haven community. And we've had them on before, so it's a good shout out to them. Definitely. We've also talked about the Trevor Project, suicide prevention hotlines, all those resources that we've had a plethora of resources.
Look
on this
at
show.
You using big words.
I had to pause for a moment. But
I felt it, but you nailed it.
Awesome. All right. Well, guys, we're going to leave you with some music. And when we come back, our guest, Steve Iacovelli, joins us to talk about his book. Here we go.
Hard to see you with a man you call your friend, but in the end I know I don't have much time to tell you why I wanna die, but then I cry, so then I lie, so I don't make you bend time. 'Cause if you
right, welcome back from the break. That was Time by the incredible Pat Riley. And now joining us is, of course, the author and our guest today of Pride Leadership, Strategies for the LGBTQ plus Leader to be a King or Queen of Their Jungle. Welcome, Dr. Steve Iacovelli.
Why, thank you very much. Happy 200th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been an incredible ride for us, and awesome. And we're super excited. We're being joined on our 200th episode by a guest, another doctor.
I was just about to say that.
We've had a
another sexy doctor too.
Yeah, that's not, right.
Aw, thank you. I'm not a whole doctor. Well, selectively I am, but that's a different story.
If DR is in front of your name, you're a doctor in our game. That's all I'm going to say. So anyway, welcome to the show. We've got this book that you put out, and we're going to be discussing this book today. Obviously, let us introduce ourselves so that you know who you're talking to. We'll start with you over here.
You're getting good at this.
I know.
I'm Nick. Hi.
Hi, Nick.
And I'm Tom.
And I'm Chris.
Hey, Chris.
How's it going?
And
where are those pearly white teeth?
I know. Stop hitting on the guest.
Ow. I got kicked.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Finally. Anyway, so welcome to the show. Why don't we start off by you telling us a little bit about you, and then we can move into your book.
Sure. My name is Dr. Steve Iacovelli. I live in sunny Orlando, Florida. So jealous. I do have a sweater on, but I do have shorts on. So you know, kind of business up top, you know, casual underneath. Originally from the Philadelphia area, by way of Columbus, Ohio, France, some other cool places I've lived. And I've been in the leadership game pretty much my whole career, so about 4 years, which is pretty awesome.
Okay.
No, about 20, 25 years or so.
I was about to be like, hold on, what?
Well, still good for you.
Thank you. You're nailing
good,
it.
Good filter right here on the camera. No, I've been in the leadership space pretty much my whole career. Was internal to Disney for many years. I was an IBMer for a couple years. I was a professor for like a hot minute. And then I started my own consulting practice about 11 years ago, full time. Top Dog Learning Group, which is a little promo sign you'll see behind me. No, don't giggle when you say Top Dog. It's not like that. My straight business partner thought of the name. But we do change management, diversity consulting, and kind of the whole gambit of things that make you a better and more effective leader.
That's amazing. And so right behind you, there's a Top Dog. There's a website there. It says, is it gayleadershipdude.com or thegayleadershipdude.com?
Yes. Believe it or not, no one took that URL. I got it.
Well, I mean, it works and it's very catchy. And so why don't we jump into this book? So,
well, first I wanted to ask, what is the difference between a heterosexual leader versus somebody in the LGBTQ plus community to you?
That's an awesome question. Well, we're more superior, which is kind of hands down what it is.
Hello.
Duh.
Thank you.
I had a guy interviewing me a while ago, a straight podcast, quote unquote, and he asked a very similar question. And my thought, of course, was, well, yeah, we're much better, more effective. Ha ha ha. But in all sincerity, that's kind of the crux of my book, is that we as a collective culture, or collective community, have gone through certain experiences, shared experiences, you know, being the quote unquote other. And you can add intersexuality and all that stuff and kind of, you know, the hybrid. But as a collective other community, we've had to go through certain things. And if I put that through the lens of being a leadership consultant, there's a lot of things that we actually have a lot of benefits for as members of the LGBTQ plus community that really are what people seek out for awesome leadership. So for example, I talk about authenticity. If you go out and look at Brené Brown and some of the other cool folks out there in the leadership space, they say, hey, you know what? Being an authentic leader is awesome. And it really gives you trust and credibility with the people around you. And that's fantastic. Now apply that through the lens of us. You know, if you're an out professional, if you're a trans person, being your authentic self at work, that's powerful stuff. And in my book, I talk about how we acknowledge that and also kind of amp that up a little bit more.
Don't you also think, though, that the LGBTQ plus community, because not only of what we have gone through, but who we are as individuals, we tend to have a higher EQ than your heterosexual counterpart?
Brilliant. That's in the chapter on empathy. We talk all about EQ, understanding that emotional quotient, and how we as that collective, you know, we can empathize with other folks, and we can take that to the boardroom, take that to the leadership space. And I really do think it's a superpower that we have and we're not tapping into as much.
Interesting.
I agree 100%.
Well, I mean, he certainly taps into a lot of these things.
Well, it's funny because I'm currently going through a leadership program through my local Chamber of Commerce, and I'm reading a great book. It's not this book, but it is a book about leadership. And it's hard to get through. Honestly, it is. Like, not that it's not a great book, because it is, but the thing is, I'm not relating to it as if I would be reading this book, right?
Yeah.
So how do you make people that are outside of the LGBT community relate to your book and teach what you're teaching in, I don't know, an executive environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll tell you a quick story. When I was working with my publisher, who was actually in Connecticut, by the way, and so I was working with the first editor that we had, and her name is Heather the editor. And Heather was the first person, which just makes me giggle, but Heather was the first person in the entire universe to read my book after me. And so I was nervous as hell. I'm sitting in a coffee shop in downtown Orlando, like, oh my, it felt like I was being called before the teacher. And Heather calls me, I'm like pacing around the little coffee shop. And she's like, before we start, Steve, I need to preface things. I'm a white, cisgendered, straight woman. I am not your target audience as it is. I said, okay. Go. She goes, this is the book I wanted for my master's program in business. I said, why? She goes, it's funny. It's approachable, but all your stuff is researched with the latest people out there who are focusing on things. I mean, I didn't invent leadership, of course, but what I did was I took the anti-academic approach and wrote it like the cheeky dad humor, which is kind of my jam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, makes it more fun. And I've been an educator on my profession where when you make things fun, it sticks with people. There's actually strategy on that. So, you know, by having chapter titles as like, you know, the shiny unicorn that is you, let's talk about authenticity and storytelling like Tori Spelling. I mean, cheeky, abso-smurfly, and I totally own up to it, but memorable. Absolutely. And that's kind of the strategy I picked. And I had a really real final story. One of my really good friends read the book, and after he finished it, he's like, it's like you were in my fucking ear the whole entire time. I'm like, yes. And that's kind of what I wanted, because that makes it more fun and approachable. And to your point, there's some amazing leadership books out there. They're like sticking pins in your eyes to get through them. And that's what I did not want to do with this book.
Which is amazing, because like I said, it's a great book that I'm reading right now, but I mean, I'm like, okay, this is hard to get through. It's got a lot of great points and a lot of great studies, but it is definitely hard to get through.
But if someone's just drilling something into you, that's not a leader. That's not, in my opinion, that's not a real leader. You have to be able to inspire people. I think you're absolutely right. Humor is one way to really make a message stick with people.
Well, yep, absolutely. One thing I noticed, like, for example, just reading the chapters, going through some of the chapters that you have in your book and what you call these chapters is actually pretty funny. Like, for example, in chapter 4, you titled it The Shiny Unicorn That Is You, Being Your Authentic Self. And then you look at chapter 6, for example, Yielding the Magic Fairy Wand in parentheses or sword of empathy. And so you're being creative and gay at the same time in choosing some of these titles that makes it interesting. People want to be able to engage in a book that takes them not only on an educational ride, but also a very fun one.
Thank you. Yeah, my favorite chapter title was the one on communication, the Being Crystal Carrington Clear, Fabulous Communication. And I was totally dating myself as someone who's, you know, approaching 50, because I remember the first Dynasty, but then the new one came out. I'm like, yes, I'm relevant again. That's awesome. So that's like, woo.
That's pretty intense. So Nick had asked before, you know, how do you get people that are not part of the community to get engaged in the book? When you were writing this book, were you specifically writing it for members of the LGBT community and trying to get them to a certain level when it comes to leadership? Or did you have non-members of our community in mind as well when you were writing this?
No, that's another great question. So it kind of shifted as I was going through. I actually started the book to be a quote unquote generic leadership book. Like I said, I met my publisher at a conference. We were sitting outside of a session sorting our little business cards. And it's like, what do you do? What do you do? And I said, you know what? I have a book in my head. It needs to come out. She's like, okay, well, let's talk. So I was going to go down the quote unquote generic leadership book. And then I really started thinking and looking at my community or our community, and specifically though here in Orlando, and looking at the LGBTQ plus leaders that are doing like awesome stuff. And you know, my inner Carrie Bradshaw kicked in. Like, I couldn't help but wonder.
Yes.
And that, yay, Bradshaw. Because I saw your quote, Nick. I had to throw that in. But but I honestly was looking at my fellow LGBTQ blue leaders and saying, you know, what is it about you that's making you that much more special and nuanced and effective? And that's kind of where it then fell into the lens through the gayness, if you will. It's still approachable. It's still the same concepts. I've literally been teaching, you know, the same topics. I mean, effective communication, building relationships, these aren't rocket science new stuff. But through the lens of being a queer person, it is kind of telling the story differently. So I shifted before I even put the first word down to say, you know what, this needs to speak to our community, use our collective experience. Obviously, everybody's unique and different, but really kind of put it through that lens. And I realized after doing some research, no one else is talking this way. There's not one other book out there that's saying, hey, gay person, lesbian, bi, trans, you're a rock star, awesome leader. Let's just amp that up a little bit and make the world even more inclusive.
I think it's important to note, too, that what is a leader, right? What is a leader to you? What does it mean to be a leader? And I also, within the LGBTQ plus community, think a lot of people feel less empowered to take on that role. And it's not until you realize you're already in that role that you're like, oh, wait, I'm a leader. Now, how do I actually execute this? Because for your life, you've kind of always been like thought of or felt as though you were less than. So what is leadership to you? How is it important for LGBTQ plus people to understand when they're being a leader and arising as a leader?
Yeah. And so I had somebody ask me, how would you boil down your book? It's 356 pages. They're like, I don't have time to read that shit, Steve. Boil it down. I said, all right, one page, one word, trust, period. That's the $1 million leadership secret for anybody out there. If you have trust from people, you are a leader. You can influence them. You can shape them. They can move along with you on the journey. It's all about trust. So at the very preface of my book, I say, okay, let's define what a leader is. And when I do my keynote speeches and stuff, I ask that first question, like, who here's a leader? Raise your hand. And you people are like, maybe I have like one direct report. I'm like, no, stop it. Okay, hear who is breathing. Raise your hand. They all raise their hand. Okay, so you are also now a leader. Think about that. And I like to make sure that people understand that they are a leader because they are. You don't have to have that direct report. You don't have to have, you know, that team of XYZ number of people following you, or you're the head honcho and you have this nice little nameplate or name tag or whatever. Everybody is a leader in one way, shape, or form. Sometimes it's a little harder if you are that indirect leader, that unofficial leader, because now you don't have the formal lines. You're now using your nuance. You're using your influencing skills, and it makes it harder. Doesn't make you any less of a leader, though. And I truly believe in my heart of hearts, every person in the world is a leader if they just rise up and take advantage of that.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was going to ask, you know, that obviously this book would be ideal for people who are in leadership roles, and we're all leaders, as you said, in some way, shape, or form, in whether that's in our personal lives or in business or in whatever you decide to focus on. But if you weren't, let's say, in a leadership role, can you get this book and look at it and sort of kind of learn or what to expect from the leaders in your life?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nick, you had a follow-up thought?
Yeah, so my follow-up thought, it's weird because I'm, like I said, I'm currently in this leadership program. I don't have any direct reports. I work very autonomously by myself. But I have people within the organization that look to me for things in a different way. So no matter if you think you're in a leadership role, you could be or probably are. And if you're thinking that something like this book is good for you, then buy it. Buy it. Read it. Embrace it. Right?
Yeah. I totally agree. I 1,000% agree. And I, as I start to work with folks who are a bit younger than me, and they don't feel that, like, oh, I'm not a leader yet. You know, I'm like, shenanigans, man, you totally are. I mean, embrace that, pull that. My favorite well, I love all the chapters. It's like, you know, all my favorite. But the one on shaping culture is the one that I think can really have the most impact in the world, because what it does, it says, okay, as a leader, and again, that's, we've now established that's everybody, there's ways for you to influence the culture around you. And I phrase it in the book initially as organizational culture, work culture, but it's much bigger than that, of course. And it's saying, you know, what are the things that you can do to influence the world around you? What's that one thing that you can do that maybe, you know, you're at the tipping point where things change? Finally, whatever that initiative or goal looks like. So, yeah, I think everybody, if I had my way, Oprah would be like, buy this book, and everybody would buy this book.
Did you hear that, Oprah?
A little passionate about it.
Seriously, right?
No, but I believe, Ellen. Yeah, we're all leaders in every shape, in every aspect of our life. Like, we make decisions every day that make us leaders of the decisions that we make and how that changes our lives. Like, you know, when you buy a house, you know, you took ownership of the fact that, you know, you needed to do this. You became a leader of your personal life, and you make the changes necessary, and you do things that you need to do, whether that's buying a house or, you know, going to the gym. That takes determination and being in charge of who you are as a person. So, and you're right. In some ways, we are all leaders and not even realize that we're doing that every day.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, you have to be able to lead your own life and be comfortable leading yourself before you can try to lead others, I feel.
100%. I have a two-part thing I want to talk about. So I want to talk about personality assessment, because I think that is a huge part of being a leader. Mm-hmm. I don't know if... So I'm going to be 100% honest. I have not gotten through your entire book yet.
That's okay.
Do you talk about the Enneagram or any personality assessment and how that applies to leadership and or leadership within the LGBTQ+ community?
I don't go into any specifics. Truth be told, I'm a qualified MBTI Myers-Briggs facilitator. So there's that. So complete overt bias.
So hold on. For people that don't know what Myers-Briggs is, can you give a little brief rundown?
Yes. There's a whole bunch of personality assessments out there. You mentioned the Enneagram, Myers-Briggs, DISC, True Colors. These are all different ways to look at someone's personality and kind of categorize it or see a trend or a type and all that good stuff. MBTI, Myers-Briggs type indicator is one, based on Carl Jung theory, blah, blah, blah. Mother and daughter created it back in World War II, blah, blah. So assessments are awesome. I think gathering data and understanding data is great, except there's the challenge that then we start to stereotype against any type, mm-hmm. Whether it be MBTI, Enneagram, DISC, like, oh, you're a high D in DISC, you know, who cares? So I think it's a nice way to start that conversation, but I don't prescribe to anyone that you have, oh, you're an MBTI, you're an ENTJ, which is what I am, truth be told. So what does that mean? Well, that's just something that's part of my personality. But what I do talk in the book is there's this fantastic model by these two smart women in LA, Garden Schwartz and Rowe, Lee and Anita, and they want to figure out how do you classify the diversity of a human and organize it. Because when you go to somebody and say, like, I go to businesses and we say, you know, oh, do you embrace diversity? Like, sure we do. We got blank month. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's that's a start. But, you know, the complexity that makes a human, an individual human, diverse is massive. So at the core of their model is personality. So we talk about personality type. And if you look at every human who's ever existed, there will absolutely never be another Nick, another Tom, another Chris. You are all unique, shiny unicorns, snowflakes, all that awesome individual words. Absolutely. Because you might have a twin. That twin will never be like you from a personality perspective. Now, the next layer out in their model is what they call internal dimensions. So it's things like race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, all, you know, the things that kind of don't change for most of your life, but that still contributes to your uniqueness. And then they keep defining the layers as they go out. But at the core of what makes every single human unique is personality. So I think assessments are good as a way to start, but I don't think they ever really get to the heart of truly identifying your uniqueness as a human.
So I agree with you 100%. I think it's interesting, though, if anybody who's listening has the opportunity to take one of these tests, it's really interesting to see where you kind of lie and how you can kind of work on different things and then kind of like identifying, okay, so how do I work on the fact that maybe I'm a little bit aggressive when I'm in a boardroom or something like that? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. These tests actually give you that. Not that I took it and said that, but it's probably true.
Tom looked at me immediately.
I know. As she should, because she's aggressive. Anyway, moving
good
on.
Good point.
But
I'm the calm one.
But I think what's so important about this book, that obviously this is a gay podcast, but it's an LGBTQ plus book. And I think that what you're doing here is really important, and how it's delivered is really important. How are you delivering this to the LGBTQ plus community to empower them? How are you empowering our community to actually embrace who they already are?
So I'm trying to do a lot of different things. Obviously getting the book out there, it just came out, pun intended, earlier, or in 2019. And it's really just getting the work out there. You've had other authors on, it's kind of the same deal, you know, just like letting people know, hey, it's here. So that's one thing. Trying to work with some employee resource groups, especially focused on LGBTs, looking and talking to LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce. I also just developed, and we're actually launching next month, a 6-month online training program that goes by the book. There's also a companion workbook that just came out like last week on my visual aid, see if you're watching at home. That's some of the ways I'm trying to get the word out. But, you know, I mean, ultimately, it's even if people don't read my book, which I want you to read the book, but if you don't, just think about your own leadership awesomeness. Like, just think about as a queer person, LGBTQ blue person, you have power. Embrace that. And then if you want to develop it further, then get Pride Leadership or get some of the other amazing straight leadership books out there. But they're all of them help you think about your leadership awesomeness, your leadership prowess. And I think that's the important part is taking that first step.
So one of the most challenging aspects of work environments nowadays is the generational gap that exists between different work groups, right? We're at a point in time in our lives and where you're seeing three different generations. You know, you're seeing the boomers start retiring. You've got the Gen Xers, or excuse me, the help me out here.
Millennials.
And then you've gotten some of the Gen Xers that are starting to incorporate themselves into the workplace. And each of these different groups and generations have different work ethics, different work styles. And does your leadership group, specifically pertaining to the LGBT community, address how to manage a workforce that currently has many, many, a plethora of ways of doing things, and sometimes causes issues within coworkers or leaders themselves in corporations and in workspaces?
Very good.
I do not on purpose.
Okay.
I'm a Gen Xer, but I'm a massive believer that you can't stereotype and group everybody by their generational goal or birth or whatever you want to call it. So I look at my one friend, she is in her mid-60s, tech savvy woman out the wazoo. You know, that's not quote unquote her generation to be tech savvy. I look at my one nephew who is not super tech savvy, although he's, you know, after millennials
Gen Z.
There's a couple different words that are flying out there. Yeah, we'll say he's Gen Z. Not the most tech savvy kind of guy in the world, doesn't really care. So you know, you have these two, and those are just two anomalies I could think of off the top of my head. I don't like to say, oh, all Gen Xers are independent because they were latchkey kids. Nah, shenanigans. But I do say in the book how we want to approach individualism and look at the people, the way you engage with them, regardless of their age or their generation. So if it's somebody who, hey, they want to be talked to face-to-face, then use that as your communication strategy, and that makes you a more effective leader. If it's someone who wants to get a text message, regardless of the generation they were born, have at it that way. So I try not to prescribe and classify by the generations, more so by getting to know the individual and kind of how can you best work with them that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's because if you look at it that way, that's almost a form of stereotyping or like a form of prejudicing. Like you're putting this group of people and this is how you have to communicate with them. They're 65 years old. They don't know how to open a cell phone. So, you know, you have to go up to them and talk to them directly. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think that's brilliant that you really made sure to leave that out of your model.
I think what's really important to note, though, too, is we were talking about emotional intelligence earlier. But if you're able to read a room and get the feel of an individual or get the feel of a team, yep, then you know how to best navigate that team, right? So, for example, I know that this person on my team is not strong with this, but they're really strong with this. How do I make sure that this gets done with her skill set or their skill set? So it's, yep. I think there are so many levels and layers to leadership, but I wanted to ask what WIIFM means, if you want to talk about that.
Oh, WIIFM.
Yeah,
WIIFM. Yeah. What's in it for me? My background's education, and especially instructional design. So whenever you're creating any sort of workshop, training class, whatever, you always have to approach it from the WIIFM, what's in it for me, meaning the participant. So as you think about the WIIFM from a leadership perspective, as a leader, I should be saying, hey, you know, what do my people get out of this? What do they need? What's in it for them? With them. And so it's basically pulling your perspective away and thinking about them first. So it's a way to engage with people and really meet people where they're coming from versus this is how I want it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I like that.
With them. It's totally with not them. Mine, but hey, I'll take credit.
So obviously there's a lot to break down in this book. And, you know, we definitely should and have an opportunity read the entire book and go through each one of these chapters. I'm sure that you'll find yourself laughing out loud more than once with the choice of topics and how they're worded as far as the chapters and the content. But you know, it's pretty cool. Thank you. I've never read a leadership book before. Actually, I really don't read much of anything sometimes. Except
she falls asleep.
I do. I take micro naps through because I read a paragraph and I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting sleepy. So I have to go take a nap and then come back and read that same paragraph again to remember what I read before. And so that's just a problem that I've had all my life. Well, you know,
is this going to be on audiobooks?
Eventually, yeah. It's funny. First chapter is on authenticity. And my publisher is like, well, let's go down the audiobook path. I'm like, well, okay, hold on. If I'm going to be authentic, I have to do it. I can't hire some rando actor. And I used to do voiceover work and stuff like that, but I just have to find the time to do it because, I mean, who else could execute my dad jokes better than me? Come on.
That's true.
So at some point it'll come. So hopefully when that happens, Tom, you'll be able to keep awake for it.
So my last question for you is, are there pillars that people can take away from this book? Do you have like a 5-pillar or a 4-pillar type of thing that you're kind of structuring the whole book around?
Well, and that's kind of, it's not by accident. And for those who aren't visual right now, I'm holding up the swag of the mouse pad I have. It's a rainbow.
I need
and
that.
I was like, we need some of those in studio.
Right. I know. I love it. So I was trying to figure out what are the top competencies to think through and talk about. And I actually had a friend over here who's like a thinking partner. We had post-it notes all over my law office. And we came up with 6. And the 6 that we thought were the ones that in the generic leadership space are out there. Authenticity, courage, empathy, communication, relationships, building relationships, and then shaping culture. So those are kind of where it's framed through. It's not just the chapters. I put it at the very beginning. They all like totally collide gorgeously together. Mm-hmm. So those are really the kind of 6 structure. And of course, it's a rainbow because it's 6. And that just was a total coincidence. Not really. It was on purpose. but that's kind of how I structured things. So in the online training, there's the 6 modules. Of course, each are color-coded, and the workbook's the same way. So that's kind of how I tried to frame it up. There's the 6. If you master these 6, you are a golden rock star leader if you get them.
So remember when I said I had 1 question left?
Yeah, uh-huh. I knew you were lying.
So funny hurt. Story, but not funny. When I took on a new role at work, I was worried about being gay and approaching a lot of hetero men in the field. And as a leader and as a person who is trying to push forward an agenda for an organization, it was really hard for me to embrace just being comfortable in a space with, 60-something-year-old white man banker. Like it was difficult. Are they going to take me serious? How do I navigate this situation? I don't know if you talk about that at all, but I think it's really important to identify that.
I do. That's why I love the last chapter on the last chapter of the 6 competencies on shaping culture, because I address something very similar where it's, you know, a lot of organizations that I've worked with either as internal or as a client who are clients. Yeah, they all have those awesome values like, you know, we embrace diversity, we embrace inclusion, blah, 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 all these like great things that you see in the break room wall and all the, you know, things. But if you are part of that corporate culture, organizational culture, that's like your shield that you can leverage. So if you're having that chat with you, that 60 something year old, not so embracing of diversity kind of person, but your organizational values are something around embracing inclusion, they're not, then that's where you can say, you know what, this is part of our, this is, you know, a value that we have here. This is our agreed upon way to work together. If that's not kind of how you jam, maybe you need to have a conversation with yourself, because I honor that value. Our senior leaders honor that value. Do you honor that value? And if you don't, then maybe that's not a good fit anymore.
Please.
No, I was going to say, and I've actually used that exactly with people, and they're just like, shit. And it's true. I mean, it's great. And that's like, hey, I'm just sharing what's here.
It is. And that can be intimidating, because you see those things in the business world. Like, we value everyone, all spectrums of people, unless you're not white, not male, and not straight. Like, you have that mentality that, especially in the business world, that, like you said, we love everyone unless you're gay, black, Jewish. Like, you know, it's that thought is there. It really is. So that, I think that is something important to talk about.
And obviously, they never put that on a billboard.
Of course.
You know, it's like, it's through their actions that you get to start realizing how exactly do they feel. Like, for example, I'm a gay man. If I walk into a bathroom full of men and they're all walking out while I was walking in, or as soon as I walked in, obviously it's telling you they're uncomfortable with the fact that I'm a gay man. Well, that's your problem. I still have to pee. Get over it.
I do have to say that, you know, in my path currently, that was my fear. And I have learned that that is, in most cases, not the case.
Hasn't been the case, right, of course.
And that fear has obviously subsided at this point. I mean, you do run into things sometimes. You're just sitting in a room, and you're sitting in a conference room, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm definitely the gay guy in the room, but I'm the gay guy that's going to get the money, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
So you can make it work.
So I think the important thing is, too, is from our experiences in the workforce and how we interact with people every day and how we, you know, literally, like, every day face all these kinds of challenges and we overcome them, gives us, in some sense, a leadership role in being able to coach others and say, this is what you could do. This is how you could potentially handle this situation in a professional space that could probably give you a better outcome if you think it through. Because, you know, it is challenging. You know, you've got different personalities. You've got different beliefs. There's a whole bunch of different things that are all working in conjunction in a place of business that could potentially make it difficult for you to excel at being a leader. And if you can master that, then you're good.
And not to belittle anybody else's experience, but being gay and having to face the fact that you're gay and come out, that challenge at whatever age it is, for me it was 16, so on and so forth, we've all talked about it on the show, but at coming out and dealing with your family and surviving and rising past that brings the ability to be a leader. It literally gives you the strength to find it in yourself to be a leader.
And I don't really mean to contradict Tom, but I find it interesting when you use the word to master. I think that's something that's so beautiful about leadership. It's something that we will never master, because in order to be a good leader, we're constantly going to be continuing learning.
I mean in the sense in how we as a person can grow and navigate the challenges that we have in life.
Right. Yeah. I'm going into education, so I like totally feel that. Yeah.
So that's amazing. You know, obviously there's going to be a lot of content in this book that is going to, you know, enlighten a lot of people. And we definitely encourage that you get the book. We're going to have all the information for the book on tonight's post and you know, the website, obviously. Mm-hmm. Where's the book available at this point for purchase?
Oddly enough, the URL steveonamazon.com was available and I snagged it up. So it'll redirect you to the page on Amazon.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
All right. Yes. Well, before we conclude, I would like to give you an opportunity to plug yourself. Tell us how they our listeners can get a hold of you, social media, all that good stuff. You know us and our innuendos.
Sure. TheGayLeadershipDude.com is one of the best ways to get a hold of me. There you can connect with my twatter and my face and all the other stuff that's out there. From a social media perspective, I am on Twitter. I'm horrible at Twitter, though. I'll own up.
Twatter is way better.
Twitter's way easier. But LinkedIn as well, you can kind of find me. I try to put stuff that both is positive as well as beneficial for folks. I try not to do too many, well, a couple dog things here and there because, you know, Top Dog Learning Group and I have canine kids. But, you know, really try to find me. Probably those are the best places to connect with me. And when in doubt, if you can't remember any of that stuff, topdoglearning.biz, B-I-Z, is kind of the main master site, if you will.
Amazing.
And you can find us on Twitter at Real Donald Trump. At Real Donald Trump. That's our Twitter.
So, last but not least, before we have to hang up with you, what is your dream? What do you want this book to do?
Oh, thank you for asking that. I am blatantly transparent. I want to start an LGBTQ plus leadership movement. I want people to be talking about leadership, our superpower that we have as a collective community, really sitting down and figuring out how can we foster each one of us to be even more effective leaders than we already are. And that's throughout the gambit from generations. It's those folks in the C-suite who are part of our community saying, hey, how are you ganging it forward, friends? Come on. And those shiny new folks coming into the leadership world, fresh out of undergrad, fresh out of high school, who really want to start to think about their own leadership excellence. How are we helping them as well?
Amazing. That's amazing. All right. Well, Dr. Steve Diacovelli, thank you so much for joining us today. I believe that there's going to be, like I said before, a lot to gain from this book. And we'll definitely have all that information. But it's been an amazing experience to have you on.
Well, thank you. And again, congratulations on 200. That's an awesome
thank
achievement.
You.
Thank you very much.
Well, I'm you exhausted. Have
your... It's been a long, long ride. But well, it's been truly fantastic.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
See, what see, dad jokes, I got them too.
And you plugged our sponsor one day. Anyway.
Well, and congratulations on your book. And we'll definitely, you know, keep in touch and hopefully, you know, come back at some point. You're always welcome. Once you're on the show, you forget it. You're
your
stuck
family
with us,
now.
Pretty much. So we'll have you come back on at some point to give us an update on the book or anything else that you have working in the background there. And super excited. Thank you for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks for the opportunity, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night. Enjoy the sun.
Thanks.
All right, guys. Well, of course, that was, again, Dr. Steve Iacovelli, and we're going to have all the information for the book available for you folks on tonight's post. And now we've got a couple of more things that we're going to cover. It's been quite an interesting show. Very, very amazing to go back during, you know, through memory lane and bring back all of those amazing memories of our show.
And it's incredible how quick it was. Like, it really, once we got started, we really remembered the things that hit us, were the most effective mm-hmm. to us and really hit us so hard because they were just pouring out.
Yeah. What is it that I always say? Time flies when you're on Prozac.
Time flies when you're on Prozac. Exactly.
All I remember is I started with a 32 weeks and now I'm at 33. So, you know, 200 episodes you know, later.
All I remember is I'm still
better
as
than
big
200
as I was.
Pounds yeah. later.
True.
Take
true.
It with a grain of salt or a bag of salt.
I miss my high table because at least then when I had that big box on it, it covered my belly. Mm. And we weren't doing live streaming at that point in time. So people couldn't see us. So I was like, I don't care if I'm in shorts. I don't care if I'm in my sriracha.
Sriracha. Exactly. I was going to bring that up earlier.
My sarong.
I just think it's. You know what is really amazing to me? For 200 episodes, though, we invited Dr. Steve on, and he was talking about leadership in our community. And I have to say, as much as we're crazy and we do stupid stuff all the time, and sometimes we get a little cursive, I really do think that we are leaders in the LGBTQ plus community.
I think
what we bring, the content we bring, and how we speak to it, and the fact that we don't just sit behind our mics. Sometimes we're in New York on protests, sometimes we're in DC, you know,
marching.
I'm giving us claps because I think that for 200 episodes,
we're humble people.
We are also doing what we need to do as leaders.
You're absolutely right. We have been here for 200 episodes behind the mic, speaking up for those who either don't have the strength to do so or are afraid to do so, those who don't have the resources to do so. But then, like you said, we've put ourselves, you know, on the field, not the battlefield, you know, but we put ourselves out there and we preach about things that we stand up for and stories that we want to bring to light to our community across the United States and across the globe. And we made sure that we were part of that. We sat there, we stood there and we marched and we sweat in the burning ass sun.
I remember.
We sweat, and we are out there, and we are.
She had her SPF on, but yeah, she sweated.
We are a very humble group of individuals, but at the same time, we want to do our best to make sure that we follow we have a dream, just like MLK did. You know, so many years ago today, his dream lives on, and we're, like we said in the beginning, we're doing our part to make this a better place for all people.
Whatever we can,
you know? What my dream is?
What's your dream?
You know.
Mimosas?
Well, yes. Yeah. No, my ultimate dream in my lifetime is to have the concept of coming out not be a thing.
I agree. I think that would be an amazing thing. For me, my dream is to, you know, pay off my home and all that good stuff, but also, you know, be more in my community and do more than I'm currently doing. And I think that eventually I'll get there. You know, there's so many things going on in my life right now. It's very busy, but I want it to be even more busy. I want to do more. And hopefully time will allow me to do that. What about you, Chris?
Just make people more active is my dream. Education is my biggest goal. Do my best to obtain as much knowledge as I possibly can and share that knowledge with as many people as possible, and continue day by day to really just grow more and always continue to learn something, and then always continue to convince people to vote.
That's right. And, you know, that's what's something that we always do. We keep learning. Every day we learn new things. And it's as I would always say, it's learning across a lifespan, right? We learn something every day.
Life ends when you give up knowledge.
That's also true. I've gotten a lot better at Facetune, so we should fix all those photos.
Because
there.
I do not look like the Barbie doll that's in the middle of
I
that.
I don't look like that cute
You
little
look
bitch.
Better now.
Really?
Yeah. You still look cute, girl. Get over yourself.
I look like Bavarian Barbie Ken.
Sounds about right.
I wanted to bring something up, just to, you know, speaking of leadership and all that stuff, obviously we're doing something right, because we got an email today from
yesterday?
Yesterday?
I don't know. I don't pay attention.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, it was yesterday. We ended up getting an email from Colby College in Waterville, Maine, and
offer me a scholarship?
No. They're asking us to come up and be a guest speaker for some time at their college. And so we don't know what the logistics are. We don't even know if this is going to happen. But obviously, we would need to check and see if we would be able to do something.
And by that, you mean I've got to call them.
That's right. And get all the logistics and find out if we could somehow make that work in our busy schedules. Because obviously, to have that opportunity to speak in front of students about podcasting and how that has impacted not only our lives, but the lives of people that listen to our show, that's incredible.
It's also about, in reading the email, it's also about being a successful professional and or adult in the LGBTQ+ community.
Darn it, which means I need to get dressed up and get a coat.
Yeah.
So, okay. And buy shoes and all that good stuff and not show up in flip-flops.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. All right. So I think that we've covered enough and done enough to make this episode 200 memorable. So why don't we go on and do one of the few things that we have left to wrap it up for tonight. So why don't we start off with Nick.
Who else?
All right. So, Chris, are you ready?
Timer. Go. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, no. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, of course you did.
All righty. What are we doing?
All right. This week's Mama Kim's Minute is ready to go whenever you're ready.
And go.
Number one, girl was expelled from a Christian school for wearing a rainbow sweater. Fuck
that. Boo.
Two, Kentucky bill seeks to ban conversion therapy for minors. Proud Yay. Of you. Three, Kanye West joins stadium prayer rally.
He fell off his horse.
With some of America's most anti-LGBTQ fucker. Four, Billy Porter rocks butterfly body art at Critics' Choice Awards to honor transgender people.
I freaking love him.
Fantastic.
So so that whole Kanye West thing, apparently he arrived on a horse into this thing. And he walked in and he fell off the horse.
Horse probably like knocked him off.
He
on
was
purpose.
Like, this is bullshit. Yeah, I don't want to.
Like, get your ass off me.
I'm a gay horse.
Too funny. All right.
I'm actually going to pull a Trish and like call in. So there's this house when I'm leaving East Hampton. Oh, I gave away where you live. when I'm leaving East Hampton.
No, you actually didn't, but then you did.
Then I did.
Well, we yeah. said it last week, right? Tom Mountain?
Oh, yeah. We did talk about that. Yeah. Right.
He's Remember?
Yeah.
Whoville. Climb this mountain?
Whoville. Right. Yeah. So there is this house. He wants a high five. Okay.
Thank you.
So there's this house, and they fly a rainbow flag and a trans pride flag over their fences, and I pass it. And every time I see it, I'm so happy to see it, but at the same time, they're so deteriorated and weathered, and I really think that they should be replaced. So what I was thinking is purchasing some new flags and stopping by their house and just knocking on the door and saying, I would like to give you guys these. I don't know if those ones that you have specific meaning, but I just see that they're really starting to get weathered, and I am so proud that you're so happy to fly this every day, and I just want to get them brighter ones.
So why don't we just find the address and send them the flags?
We can do that. All right.
Yeah, all right. So you all right. have a job to do.
I got it.
All right, he's got a job to find out, and then Trish has to buy stamps and do all that stuff. So Trish will mail it all out.
And we'll make it work. Oh, God.
I'm not the administrative assistant.
All right.
Anyway, so this week's Gay Talk term, of course, brought to you by
GayRealEstate.com.
We talked about them.
Is score?
Score.
So score, out the pussy, to gargle or use mouthwash.
Yeah.
Score out that stanky pussy.
Oh, I get it now. I'm like reading it. I'm like not, it wasn't clicking, but now it makes sense.
Lord have mercy.
Chris?
I was going to gargle this, but I was laughing and it would have went all over my MacBook, yeah. So I decided against that.
Don't be a Trish.
Yeah, no. So on this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
We have two.
Oh, I'm doing the both of them?
No, just do that.
No, I'm just going to do this one.
Oh, I thought you had two. Okay.
No, well, I liked the first one because that was good news out of Albania. Anywho, so when January 20th, 1993, here in the United States of America, our love and one of our guests, two times,
our
Melissa
beloved.
Etheridge, came out as a lesbian.
That's right. I love that.
Because she started a whole movement. Remember her talk
and
with
she
Ellen
did it. She
and
did
Rosie?
It in an amazing way, too, right? Because she got up on that balcony and she goes like, I am proud to have always been a lesbian. I was like, those words, just, and the crowd just went bananas.
Absolutely. She did this during the Triangle Ball, which was an LGBTQ-focused celebration of President Clinton's inauguration.
Yeah, that woman is just incredible. She's been through so much, cancer, mm-hmm. you name it.
I believe more than once, actually, too.
Yeah, it's just incredible.
And she's got a lovely wife. She's has children, and she is still rocking and rolling to this day.
Yeah, she's
nothing
a superstar.
Going to stop her.
She is a superstar, and she will always be, and I just freaking love her. Well, actually, we do. So, all right, listen, guys, if you love the show, make sure you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published. As we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, you can also support us on Patreon. It is a service that allows you, our listeners, to help support the show with a pledge donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Chris?
Next week, we're very excited to welcome Yuval David. Yuval is an out queer actor, host, and filmmaker, and we can't wait to have him on the show.
That's right.
And thank you to our desk.
Okay.
Yeah. To our guest, Dr. Steve Iacovelli. Am I saying that wrong? Probably.
No, you got it right.
For joining us on today's show and to talk about his book, Pride Leadership Strategies for the LGBTQ+ Leader to Be the King or Queen of Their Jungle. His information, along with how to get the book, will be on today's post.
That's right.
I love how you nailed Iacovelli but couldn't say guest.
Oh, I said desk, though. I mean, that's close.
Yeah. Thank him for being on our desk.
I will, one day.
Oh.
Well, in the spirit of that, can we please put several rubbers on her?
Yes.
No, just one.
Okay. Just for protection.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces for the 200th time.
Yes, she does.
You can find us on social media. Shut up. Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0. Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0. Twitter, at Gay Talk 20. Email, gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, you can give it a try.
I've actually done it a couple times, so not 200. We'll talk in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Tom, take it away.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to shut this shit down.
Oh, Lord have mercy. If you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website and click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments. You can suggest topics. You can submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a question via voice message. That question we can answer for you on air. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need the digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On that note, ladies and gents, that is our show. That is our 200th episode and show. Thank you. And y'all have a good night. Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.